Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes as we will recap the Vikings game on Sunday night. Certainly a rough performance for the Giants as they fall 49-17. They fall to 6-9 on the season. The Vikings improved to 10-5, and the Giants were mathematically eliminated from things when the Redskins beat the Philadelphia Eagles on Saturday night. So the Giants will miss the playoffs for the fourth consecutive season. And we'll certainly get into all of that along the way here for the next 60 minutes, as plenty of activity occurred last night, and it was a very rough performance, at least from an offensive perspective for the Giants, as they really struggled to gain any continuity or momentum, Jeff. 1-for-11 on third
down. My mic is out.
Your mic is out. All right. Well, we will certainly work on that along the way here. Well, try to figure out. Did somebody hit a switch?
I heard it. No, I heard
like
it.
That?
I heard
is
it go out underneath here. Sorry, guys, but.
All right. We'll work on the technical issues here. In terms
I heard
of
it go
the,
out.
Mic.
I must have kicked something underneath there, but it's.
I think we have a little technical issue here, but in the meantime,
oh, here, let me see here.
While we work that out, there we go. See, hear me loud and clear now.
It's Christmas
there you go.
Again.
Perfect. All right.
You got to plug
you
in.
Turn the switch on.
But the last thing you said that I heard.
You did hear that, okay.
Caught my eye was 1-11.
Yes,
one for 11 on third down. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's not good. That's all I heard. 1-11.
Well, I'm glad
I didn't hear anything
that.
Else.
Yes.
So.
Well, and that was one example of all of the things that obviously went wrong for the Giants from an offensive perspective. And Eli Manning, he did not complete a pass until about 10 minutes and change in the second quarter. We knew that they weren't going to have Odell Beckham. And the big storyline, Jeff, in a game like this is, okay, who's going to step up? Who's going to take advantage of their opportunities? And it's not one particular individual. You need a group effort. And 7 catches combined for the entire receiving
the
core.
Game.
Correct. On the game. You know, that just wasn't enough. And then Eli Manning, the 3 interceptions, one of which was returned for a touchdown. You know, you throw all of that together. It's not a surprise that obviously there was a lack of offensive production.
No, and the Viking defense had it teed up exactly what they were going to need to do to win this game. One, number one, no Odell Beckham. We're going to pressure Eli Manning, okay? And the defensive backfield, the safeties and the corners, they're not going to have to do a great job of covering because those guys couldn't get open anyways. And it just played out perfectly for the Vikings. They put pressure on Eli. They got 4 sacks. He was hit 8 or 10 times, threw 3 interceptions. There it is. And when you don't have a guy like Odell Beckham in your lineup that can take away some of the attention, it just doesn't work. And, you know, protection-wise, the Giants have done a remarkable job of protecting Eli this season. They were 3rd or 4th in the NFL in sacks given up coming into this game. They had not given up a sack in the last 2 games combined. So there's just a lot that went wrong. And once you start to get in the head and the face of Eli, and with those receivers that were out there yesterday, there's not and even we talked about trying to get the ball to the tight ends. You know, that's kind of where he went. He went to the tight ends because there were checkdowns mainly. When your receivers aren't getting open and you got a checkdown to your tight ends, you know, you're not getting great production out of it. You're getting 5-6 yard completions, but that's about it.
Yeah, the longest completion turned out to be that 72-yard touchdown to Reuben Randall, and Rashad Jennings had the 50-yard gain. That was off a short pass,
though. That was a screen.
Outside of that, the 2 tight ends who you referred to, they had 3 receptions apiece. That was the team high, team lead, and 14-yard pass to Will Tye. That was the longest, pretty much, for the most part. And Minnesota said to itself, going into this game, you know, we're not going to give up the long pass.
You don't have anybody to get over the top.
Correct. So we're not overly concerned with that. We're going to play and keep everybody in front of us. And the Giants just couldn't get into a flow, couldn't get into a rhythm. With that being said, there were times where they ran the ball effectively, Jeff. But, you know, every time there seemed to be a positive gain or positive field position. He had a turnover. He had drop passes. I mean, that was a big storyline. Penalties. I mean, all of it just combined was an absolute killer on offense.
And I got to give props to Rashad Jennings, who for the third week in a row has really come out and played hard. And I think he showed up to play last night. And I think that this offense realizes that he's their kind of bell cow when it comes to running. I mean, just give this guy the ball and let him go. And it kind of, you scratch your head, like, where was – I know this running back by committee that we talk about throughout the season with those three or four guys, but it just shows you that he is capable of getting the job done. I mean, he's had three games in a row now that they've run the ball successfully. And when you look back on that formula of trying to be a balanced offense, you know, if you had that – earlier in the season or even the middle of the season, what would offensively have been like? So, and could you have maybe, if with a running game like they had the last three games, Lance, could they have maybe won some of those games that they lost in those last 2 minutes by having a viable running game where you take money, you take time off the clock in that 4 minute offense, as they say. But, you know, really the offense struggled, the defense continues to struggle, and there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, speaking of the defense, Minnesota ran for over 200 yards. It's the second time this season a team has run for over 200 yards against the Giants. Dallas was the first back in Week 7, and we knew this heading in. The Minnesota Vikings, just like the Carolina Panthers, are built around the running game. They revolve around the running game. So you knew they weren't going to put this game in the hands of Teddy Bridgewater, regardless of the Giants' defensive struggles, specifically on the back end. Minnesota pounds the ball 40 times. And Adrian Peterson, and we talked about this on the postgame show on the radio last night, Jeff, he's that patient runner. He waits, he picks up 2 to 3 yards, and then all of a sudden he finds the hole,
finds the big one,
and he breaks for the big one, which he did last night.
And not only him, but McKinnon did too. I mean, he broke a long run. Just stood there behind the line of scrimmage and, you know, got lost. And next thing you know, he just busted it out. And, you know, that's just you can't have that happen because the Giants defense, they're in a clock-killing mode there. You know they're running the football. And to give up a play like that is just absurd. You know, one thing the Giants, they got some sacks last night. And I think, you know, trying to pull some positives out of this is hard. But I look at the pass rush, you know, they got some sacks. And but Teddy Bridgewater, a lot like Cam Newton, can do damage with his legs. And he got outside the pocket. He scrambled for a huge first down there that led into first down in the red zone. But, you know, defensively, you just they knew they were going to run the football, and they still couldn't stop it.
Well, and also the defense was put in some tough spots, given the fact that the
turnovers. Yeah, and Tom Coughlin had mentioned that.
The onside kick.
He really did. The onside kick. They went to a couple times fourth down stops. They had interceptions that were other than the one that was run for a touchdown. But, yeah, put in some bad spots. And really, offensively, you can't do that to your defense at all.
Now, the other angle to this game, the fact that the Giants knew going in they were mathematically eliminated. Redskins beat the Eagles on Saturday night. And this is a team throughout the course of Tom Coughlin's tenure that has played very hard for the head coach.
Yep.
Very rarely do you ever question the effort of this team. And, Jeff, you've been in these circumstances when you go into a game, you know you got really nothing to play for. But there are still a lot of things riding on a game like this for individuals and the team as a whole, especially since there's a number of free agents on this team and there's a number of guys, they don't know what their future is all about.
No, and I think when you are dealing with a team the way that this team is this year, the losing record, you automatically know there are going to be changes next year in the personnel part. So you as an individual player have to understand that you still got two games to play, you're still under contract, you're still getting paid, but you have to go out and showcase your talent for those next 2 weeks because you're being evaluated. I'm sure that Tom Coughlin had mentioned that in his team meeting and to the players that, hey, listen, even though there's nothing to play for, you have everything to play for, and that's yourself going forward in the evaluation process. What you did see, Lance, was you had three practice squad guys that were brought up. Okay, that is an audition. They did that on purpose because of the depth. They needed some depth at certain positions, but more importantly, they feel like these guys need a look, wanted to see in a regular NFL season game, not a preseason game, get them against some good competition and see how they how they pan out. That's one of the reasons they brought those guys up yesterday. And so I think that it was important for those guys to play well. We did talk about this. It is very difficult for those young guys to play well when you don't get to practice with the big boys. So a lot of the practice squad guys are not running the Giants offense. They don't know it, or the defense. They're running the other team's offense and defense. So when you get brought up, you get a week to practice with the team. That's not certainly enough for these guys to understand. And you could see it last night with some of the routes that these guys were running. Some of the mistakes were made in the passing game with these younger guys. So it's difficult to ask, but they were evaluated on, you know, other things, you know, how you were lining up, your blocking, some of your adjustments, some of your mental errors, things like that. That's what the evaluation came from.
And in addition to that, I think what's probably most disappointing, at least from the fans' perspective, after that Jennings big 50-yard gain off that screen pass that you talked about, you know, this was a golden opportunity early in the game, a red zone opportunity. Hey, try to put away some of those early struggles, and then you have drops by your veterans in those circumstances. Shane Vereen and Reuben Randle, two critical drops. Then Akeem Nicks gets a 4-yard gain, but the Giants have to settle for a field goal. I looked at that drive, and you know, it pretty much summed up the contest because they seemed as if they finally got over the hurdle. And they moved the ball, they were knocking on the door, but then all of a sudden those red zone issues came back to bite them, and that has been a prevalent storyline throughout this season.
And you're right, because they had the big screen to Jennings, okay, and then they settle for a field goal. Then the next possession they get, there was a mistimed route with Eli and Reuben Randle that turns into a Harrison pick six, Harrison Smith. You know, yeah, these are opportunities they had. At that point in time, with that field goal, it's 10-3, you know. And then
still
all of a sudden,
competitive game.
Then all of a sudden it just started to roll. The Vikings get a pick six, and then they get another field goal before the half. Which, by the way, I know this, you know, a lot of people don't understand. When it's 13 degrees out, okay, there's a lot of things that happen in a football game that when you make a living with your hands and your feet, what Blair Walsh was doing last night was incredible. He had 4 field goals in 13-degree weather with 2 over 50. That's impressive. It is tough kicking conditions when it's that cold out. The ball is hard. It doesn't feel good on your foot. And it is very difficult to kick when it's that cold and throw and catch. But that's why they pay you the big bucks. You still got to do it.
Absolutely. And we saw Dwayne Harris had some issues early in the game in terms of handling the ball and so forth because of the conditions. Obviously, that
didn't
play
well. And
then
they took him off kickoff return because you saw Shane Vereen in there. And then actually at the end of the game, I think you actually we saw one of the young guys, either Miles White or I'm losing track of what numbers these guys were last night. It was kind of
– in terms of a return.
Kickoff return, yeah.
Well, let me look at the box score here.
But I know
– Ben Edwards had a return.
That's what
that
it was.
Yeah.
So another – and he, by the way, is a practice squad guy that came –
correct.
Called up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and part of that was they did place a few guys on IR, so this is what they have to do at the end of the season when the options are limited. And, you know, I think you did bring up a good point, Jeff, that you can't – it's not necessarily an excuse for Eli Manning in the offense, but when you have limited practice reps with these players – and this goes back to what we talked about earlier this season. Odell Beckham, if you recall, missed some practice time. It translated over to the game. The weeks that he practiced, this was when he was dealing with the hamstring injury earlier this season. The weeks he practiced, it was different in terms of how Eli Manning and Odell Beckham performed on offense each and every weekend.
But I will preface this, okay? I'm not making – that is not an excuse, okay? Remember this. You had Reuben Randle in the game.
Correct.
You had Akeem Nicks in the game.
Shane Vereen.
And you had Shane Vereen and Dwayne Harris. So it's not like I'm saying that none of those guys were in the lineup and that now all these practice squad guys come in the game. However, we talked about who was going to step up in Odell's absence. Well, to me, none of them did. I mean, you want to give that touchdown to Reuben Randle. That was two missed tackles on that play. But other than that, 7 completions to receivers on the day is not getting it done or not stepping up, in my opinion. So they had their opportunities. They really did. But the Vikings did a nice job of taking their game away from them.
They got very comfortable, the Vikings, because they were able to get to the quarterback. And when you could get to the quarterback, that's going to help out your own secondary. And they surrendered the Giants' offensive line a season-worst 4 sacks. Yeah. So that certainly puts things in perspective. And you know, I think that you hit up a good point, Jeff, the fact that, listen, it was the veterans that were dropping passes just as much as the practice squad players.
Question.
It wasn't as if the practice squad players were the only ones out there with some mishaps. This was evenly spread across the board.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it just, again, the defense has a tough time One thing that we saw from the beginning of this season that kind of cooled off the last four or five games is the turnovers. The defense was getting turnovers and keeping the Giants in some of these games. Well, as of late, you know, that has not – that's gone away. And offensively, early in the season, the Giants' offense wasn't turning the ball over. And now you're seeing a little bit of a epidemic here in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the Giants' offense turning the ball over. So there's your kind of, you know, your reasoning a little bit. But when this Giants' defense doesn't get turnovers, it's hard for the – and the offense is turning the ball over, it's hard for these guys to stay in games.
Well, the Giants fell to 1-3 in games where they have no takeaways this season. So that's
okay,
one
so
interesting
that's
stat
games,
related
right.
to what you were pointing out. And then in this recent stretch here, Jeff, this is a team that has had 3 takeaways in the last 5 games.
Okay, and look at the first 5 games of the season.
First five games, you're talking about 3, none, 3, 2, and none. You had 8 takeaways in the first 5 games.
Yeah. There.
3 in these last 5.
And remember, these were all games that, you know, coming down to, we talked about time management issues, and we talked about losing games in the last, you know, 2 minutes of the game. But they were getting turnovers, and they were in those games. They were in those games, okay? And, you know, look at last week now. They got blown away in the first half. They come back, and they stay in that game. What was the turnovers last week?
Well, last week it was, in terms of the Panthers, 2 turnovers, 1 takeaway.
So
it was minus one in terms of the turnover differential. But they've been losing the turnover battle. That's
every
been
week,
the consistent
yeah.
trend for the most part, or it's been even. Because if you go back to week 12 with the Redskins, 3 turnovers, no takeaway. So you were -3 against Washington. You were even with the Jets. You were even with the Dolphins. You were -1 with the Panthers, and now you're -3 last night against the Vikings.
So those 5 games there, you have not been on the plus side of the turnover. So
whereas they were in the plus just about every single week early
in
the season. Win or loss, they were still in the plus.
And they're plus 12 on the season. Well, not after last night. I don't know exactly what.
Well, they fall to now they're plus 6.
Wow.
And there was one point where they were in the high teens, Jeff, in terms of the
19.
Turnover differential.
Yeah, they were up in
very early in the
NFL.
Season. All of a sudden, that's dipped to plus 6.
And if you go and look, just want to amuse yourself, if you have nothing else to do on this holiday season on a Monday after a Giants loss like this, go on and see the top teams in the NFL and look at their turnover ratios and where they're at. It's a sickening statistic.
Goes hand in hand.
It really does. And I think either once in a while you get one team in there that might be, you know, lower on the totem pole that's actually in the playoffs. But very rarely is the Super Bowl winner not in the top 5 in turnovers. You know, it's just the way the game is played. And it's one of those statistics that people look at for the success of the season. And when they come, I mean, turnovers come at different times and different, you know, junctures of the game. And but they are the number one stat other than punting statistics.
Correct. And it had to do with the fact that you had a lot of aggressive players early in the season. You were able to get your hands on footballs. You were able to get for the loose balls. You were able to return for touchdowns. You know, those things sometimes come in bunches, in fairness. But it was so consistent, Jeff. It was almost as if we were taking it for granted. Oh, the Giants, you figure you pencil in at least 1 or 2 big plays every single week because it was happening like that.
Yeah, I mean, there was
now,
always
all of a sudden,
part of our fact or fiction. You know, there was always the Giants will get to be on the positive side of turnovers or, you know, this, that. And that question has kind of gone away. Schmelk has not put that question in there any much.
Yeah.
So, anyways. But, you know, how does this team react? How do the fans react going forward to this game? I think that, you know, you got a divisional matchup here, 1 o'clock this Sunday, the last game of the season. How do these guys respond to this? I know that the players are not in the building today. They have tomorrow off, and you know, I think there's treatments and things today, but they got to get their mind straight and come back and Wednesday get ready to go.
Divisional game against the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that already beat the Giants 27-7. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports free to play. All right, let's open up the phone lines here on this Monday edition of BBKL. We get things started with Chris in Syracuse. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, Chris. What do you got for
good.
Us?
Well,
good. I'll take it a little easy on you guys for a Monday. I'm sure you're dreading the calls. But a couple of things I wanted to hit right quick. One thing I read earlier that I thought was kind of interesting is that this game against Philadelphia is going to determine who winds up going to London to face the Rams next year.
Correct.
So But I think that's important because I'd rather not have to go over there than have a bye in October and that whole bit. Of course, I mean, you might have a bye early anyways, but I'm just saying if you go over there, it's guaranteed. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Prince, I wanted to talk about Prince really quick. He is my guy, but he has been so off since he came back, and it's just so weird to me that it was a pec. It's not like it's something that should be slowing him down. He just seems like he's out of position and gets smoked constantly ever since he's come back, and that's really kind of disappointing. I mean, I think we still need to sign him in the offseason and everything, don't get me wrong. But the other point I wanted to make real quick is we didn't even have a legit number two receiver out on the field last night, let alone Odell, obviously. But, I mean, we've been without Victor Cruz all year. And I got a bold prediction here. I'm willing to bet that the Giants may strongly consider parting ways with him this offseason if it comes to having a healthy receiver available in free agency and freeing up the money, because we don't even know what Victor Cruz is anymore. And I hate to say that because he's been, you know, a good Giant, obviously, and all that, but something's got to give here because you can't lose one receiver and have your entire offense shut down.
No. And, you know, Victor Cruz, he hasn't played in, you know, a year and a half, basically. So, yeah, you're right. You don't know what you're going to get coming back out of him, but you kind of hope you're going to get some resemblance of Victor Cruz because that would be, you know, pretty good. And that's what we kind of were hoping that would have happened this year. But you got to look for that second and third receiver. You don't know what's going to happen with Reuben Randall, if they're going to re-sign him or he's going to be a free agent. Dwayne Harris is here to stay. We know that. I like him. I think he's a good, you know, he's a good three or four, but he's certainly not going to be your second. So,
yeah, no question. I'd like to see us hopefully. I mean, this white kid, he's made some good catches. He made a contested one yesterday.
Got a little speed.
As far as I'm concerned, Randall and Nix and whatever, see you later. I'm just done with those guys. I mean, they've been good for us in the past, and I hate to be callous about it, but they're just not producing.
Well, you know, you look, Chris, at the position of the Giants coming into this game next week, at what type of draft pick they're going to get next year. Certainly they're going to be in the, you know, the top 15. So, you know, do you look at another receiver in that position? You know, it looks how it's panned out recently for the receiving draft picks throughout the league. I mean, these guys have been phenomenal.
Especially
last year's class. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know exactly I'm not into the draft as of now, but never know.
Well,
so.
I think a lot, though, depends on free agency, how that plays out first, and that will dictate what they do in the draft.
But, you know, really, you know, Victor Cruz is under contract. He's going to come back and see what he does this offseason. He's got a long ways to go before things start up again as far as on-the-field stuff. So, you know, he will be healthy by the time everything starts up again.
Chris,
see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Thanks
for
taking my call.
Stay
Chris,
warm there,
you got
Chris.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. One of the things also when you look at the receiving core yesterday, Jeff, was the fact that and Eli Manning with the interceptions, Tom Coughlin had spoken about this in the postgame presser. He mentioned one of the interceptions, he felt that Randall did not get off the line of scrimmage very strongly. Another one, Manning didn't see the help side defender. That was the third interception that Captain Munnerlyn got. But they were showing a lot of the video on the television where the receivers were trying to get open, and separation was an issue last night in terms of guys winning their individual battles. And that's a big part of giving Eli Manning options, in addition to obviously the pass protection issues. But you expect when your guys get off the line of scrimmage that somebody's going to win the individual battle, regardless of whether Beckham's on the field.
Well, you know, point blank, Reuben Randall's had a problem getting off the line of scrimmage all season. Okay, so that's one. Hakeem Nix doesn't have that first step anymore, okay? Dwayne Harris is your only guy that's really has gotten off. He can get off the line of scrimmage pretty well. The first pass of the game, he drops it for definitely a first down and maybe some bigger plays. Then you got the younger guys who, you know, if I'm a veteran defensive back looking at a young guy, I'm jamming him. He's not getting off of me.
Test
and
his
then,
experience.
And the next thing you know, then the defensive line for the Vikings are getting after the passer, the offensive line for the Giants. So it's just a recipe for disaster. You're right. But it's funny because it all starts with just the little things. Getting off the line of scrimmage. Look at the trickle-down effect of these guys not being able to get off the line of scrimmage. And then it goes to the defensive, the offensive lineman, to the quarterback, to the pass protection. It's just nuts.
because you need time. I mean, you need time even for Eli Manning's case to get rid of the football,
and
even within 3 seconds.
And look at what happens when Eli has time. Are you kidding me? And when he has time and those guys are getting open, Eli Manning will shred you. He will shred you. But when you do, when you cannot get off the line of scrimmage and don't get open and you don't have time, it's over.
You play right into the hands of the defense.
Exactly.
Especially their pass rush, which we know was very effective. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Bob is in Pennsylvania. Bob, what's happening?
How you doing? Happy New Year, guys.
Same
to you, Bob.
Jeff, I just want to say to start off, you were one of the most amazing directional kickers I've ever seen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Put a lot of time and effort into that one, my man.
You were good at that.
Thank you.
And you helped us a lot in 2007. I listen every day, guys, and I don't call in that much, so I just want you to give me a couple of minutes.
Okay,
today.
We'll afford you
but
that.
Going back to 2008, the last 8 drafts, we have had one person from the 3rd and 4th rounds who has contributed anything in the last 8 years. I just want to go over. I looked this up, and I just want to name the names. I don't think it's going to bore everybody. I think it should be interesting to listen to this.
Well, I know the Giants have only had 2 Pro Bowlers since that draft going forward. I know that.
I'm just saying those. You have to hit once in a while in the 3rd and 4th round. That's not really drafting real deep. Now, Mario Manningham, 2008. He was the guy, Jerry Reese's jackpot on the 3rd round pick. We wouldn't have won a Super Bowl without him. 4th round pick that year was Brian Keel. 2009, Ramses Barden, 3rd round. Travis Beckham, 3rd round. 4th round, Andre Brown. 2010, Chad Jones had the car accident, won't hold that against him. Philip Dillard, 4th round. 2011, 3rd round, Jarrell Jernigan. 4th round, James Brewer, that big, outstanding offensive lineman. 2012, Jaron Holsley, who can't locate the ball, and they finally decided that he can't play football. It took a long time to figure that out. 4th round, 2012, Adrian Robinson, the JPP of tight ends. 4th round, Brandon Mosley. 2013, DeMontre Moore, the guy with all the football instincts. Ryan Nassib. And he's played like 7 snaps since he's been here.
Well, in fairness, hold on. In fairness, though, Bob, I mean, Eli Manning's your starting quarterback.
Bromley, so. Andre Williams. 2015, I won't hold 00 against Jerry Reese as long as he turns out to be LT, because that's what it's going to take to make up those drafts. Mr. Reese has to go. I'm sorry. He looked like Mr. GQ. Dwight Freeney was available. He was good enough to play for Arizona, but a local guy from New Jersey, he wasn't good enough to help out pass rush. Sorry, guys. Mr. Reese is done.
All right.
Well, Bob.
I hope those names resonate a little bit with people. We have to hit once in a while in the 3rd round. No, once in a while?
Well, I think you got to need to hit more than once in a while to build your roster. So I think you got a point there.
That's why Minnesota, that game last night, it was very telling. We have no talent on the field.
Well, it is tough to win when you can't match up across. It really is.
It's hard. And it's also hard when you're relying on, you know, guys who just came off the practice squad because of injuries and other issues that you've had to deal with. So, you know,
everybody's
Bob.
Everybody's got injuries. Everybody. New England seems to find a way. Yeah. Thanks for letting me vent, guys. And
you're welcome. Continue to listen, and we appreciate the call.
Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's move along here. Let's check in with Joe in Pennsylvania. We'll stay in that state. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, hi, guys.
Hi, Joe.
How we doing, Joe?
Yeah. Hey, Happy New Year's coming up. No, it was a tough situation to be in yesterday. You know, it, really in the back of their minds, the Giants known that they lost couldn't make it to the playoffs. You know, they played very hard in Carolina, and that has to take a lot out of you. And then going into, you know, all the other close ones that they lost, and then going into the, you know, the cold weather there yesterday and with the injuries and that. And, you could understand what happened there yesterday. But I like this next game, and here – going, last year we played the last game against the Eagles, and if I hate to say it, if we did lose that game, we wouldn't have our starting tackle there, the rookie guy, I forget his name,
Eric Flowers. Yeah,
Flowers, right? And talking of him, I think I would set him down. His leg again yesterday. I don't want that ankle to get any worse. He maybe was with the cold and everything like that. I think, you know, I know he don't want to sit down. He's, you know, but I just make sure he ain't going to hurt it any worse. That's all. And I would bring up the practice guys for the next game. And I would give Eli to start to continue his game, but then I'd bring in our backup quarterback there, I think, after the first quarter. You know, we want to play hard, but we want to evaluate, and that's what we have to do. And we have to go strong defense next year. And I know, like, guys like Randall and Prince, you know, them guys, we got to see who's out there on the market, too, that definitely, you know, are they worth more than these guys, you know? Even JPP, we have to look and see. They're big questions, and I think we should go one more year with Jerry and Tom. You win two Super Bowls there. I think you earn it. And this would be the finale, really, if we wouldn't make the playoffs. And, you know, they played hard all year round, and that's just my feelings on it. And, you know, hopefully we can get somebody strong in the draft defensively, you know, to anchor the line, because I think that was a big thing this year coming in. And
definitely,
I think we got some good base guys there in the line there. Most of it's together. It's dealing with injuries and the running backs. So I think it can work out. I think we do need somebody to bring in there to make sure either a tight end or a receiver for sure to compliment Beckham, and I think we'll be all right. So thanks again, and Happy New Year, guys.
Hi, Joe. Same to you.
Yeah,
appreciate
the phone
call.
You know, a lot of people, you realize that, you know, that when Jonathan Hankins went out of this lineup with his injury, that hurt the defense because he was, you know, really having a solid year. And you look at what Joe had said about the players' question marks next year. You got JPP, who's a free agent. Reuben Randall's a free agent. Hakeem Nicks
is
a free agent.
Free agent.
Prince is a free agent. So you got your handful of guys there. But, you know, you're going to have to get some draft picks, and free agency is the first thing that starts up, Lance. It starts in February. And, you know, hey, it's right around the corner. Not in February. It's usually March is when the signing period comes. So, but that'll be the first evaluation of, first of all, they'll evaluate their own roster. And then they'll figure out what they need to go out and their priorities in free agency, and then they'll work on the draft. That's kind of what's coming up.
That's exactly the game plan. I mean, that comes before you even see what holes you want to fill in the draft.
Yeah, you got to evaluate your own roster.
Correct, yeah.
And that's
and
what
you got to determine
right now.
Yeah, who you want to re-sign, who you may want to bring in, and so forth. And that evaluation process even goes on during the course of the season. I
well,
mean,
it
guys
has
are evaluated,
to.
Yeah.
It has to, because you can't just say all of a sudden now that we're out of the playoffs, we're going to evaluate the rosters the last 2 weeks. That's just not going to, you know, that just doesn't, that's not the thinking there. But, you know, we're talking about it because there's nothing left to talk about. There's no playoffs, there's no nothing. So what is the next step? And that's, you know, really evaluation of your roster.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to lines. Andrew is on the line. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Jeff. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Andrew. What's on your mind?
So, being from Wisconsin, I actually had a chance to go to the game yesterday. And it was interesting when, after our first drive, I think we went 3 and out.
Yep.
And Eli had a couple of missed passes. And I turned to my brother and I told him, we need to get the running backs and tight ends more involved in the passing game. And I think I went back and looked at the plays. We only had two passes to running backs and tight ends over the whole first half. Now, one of them was the big pass to Rashad Jennings. And I just was wondering, my first point before I get to my second point, why did we not try to pursue that more often with our, you know, kind of lackluster receiving core?
Well, I think initially I thought that they were the tight ends were. Remember, we lost Whitlock, who was your fullback, so you had a lot of the tight ends that were actually blocking last night. They're using a little more than normal. So, but you know, I'm with you when I'm looking at the drive charts, and I was tweeting some things last night about where is Will Ty, where is Shane Vereen, you know, and when all these drop passes and everything that was happening. You got to go back to what's successful, and that's throwing the ball to the guys you can count on, and that's Shane Vereen, and he even dropped a pass, and Will Ty even dropped a pass. But those, you're right. Where was that? I don't know, and it's a good question because I was asking the same thing.
Sure. All right. So my second and final point, and I'll take your response off air, Jeff. I'm kind of aiming this one towards you because you were on the team before, and over the past 6-7 years. We've made the playoffs once. It's pretty disappointing and starting to kind of forget what it feels like to actually have that excitement to be in the postseason. And I know that there's not one person or, you know, that we can put the blame on. We can't put it on Tom, all on Tom, or all on Reese or the players. But I think it's time to consider maybe just moving forward from Tom and Reese. And what I want to ask you, Jeff, is, you know, I know there's no lack of effort with the players, but a move forward from Tom and Reese, I think that would only bring more out of our players and kind of I'm struggling to find the word, but better play and more motivation to kind of show that they deserve to be on this team, and it might help us going forward in the future. I appreciate you guys taking my call. Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, Andrew.
Well, listen, in the National Football League, change is inevitable. It's going to happen eventually sometime or another, okay? Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. A lot of times, you know, change enlightens a lot of people. It actually lights a fire under some people. But I think on the flip side of it, you have to look at what is the goal of the change, okay? If you're going to collectively do a change where you, as they call, clean house, where they just remove everybody and start over, you have to look at the long-term effect of that. You know, they have to look at the existence of your roster now. Can this roster sustain some type of a change like that that's going to take you through the next 2 or 3 years? There's going to be patience involved in that. Or do you keep some guys on the staff and then you do – so there's a lot of things that go into this decision-making when you are, as an organization, deciding that if this is going to be the end or a continuation of the staff that is there, the players that are there. So that's something that you look at from an organizational standpoint. I think I said this last night on our post-game show, the one ingredient to choosing or going forward with any type of coaching staff or any change is the fact that how is the team responding to the coach? Okay, are they still playing for that coach? Are they still motivated by that coach? This team is, and I think that they do play for Coach Coughlin. They don't quit. Last night was Philadelphia game were two to come to my mind for the whole season so far.
The
Lance,
only
that,
two
that really have that just it was you know other than that these guys have just they're playing for your coach. So these are just some of the things you have to think about. I am in no shape, way, or form saying that this is what's going to happen here. I have no idea. I mean, we're here to talk about the game. We're here to talk about you know how what happened and what going forward to the next game. But listen. You know, if they had me make these kinds of decisions, I probably wouldn't be talking to you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. That's for sure.
That's
so
true.
With that being said, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Conrad on the line in Manhattan. Conrad, what's happening?
Hi, Conrad.
Hey guys, Eagles. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, my man.
Hey, yeah, I love the show. Just wanted to make a comment about the wide receiving call yesterday. It's apparent when you can look on the field that nobody was really putting the effort as far as running their routes properly. We look at, and I hate to say put an effort, but that's the only thing that I could say when I'm looking at receivers that are running routes, and these are professional receivers, and you're looking at the speed level where it looks like some of them are just sleepwalking out there. So with that being said, I'm not sure what can we do in the future to actually increase the talent on the team overall. I don't think Tom deserved to get fired because when we look at the talent, I think that the coaching staff has gotten the best that they can out of this group that we currently have. I think we need linebackers, which is going to be a very key for the defense. I think we need an additional safety and somebody on the line. I would like to give JPP another shot to see what he got. I mean, the kid's out there playing the way he is, and you could tell the effort alone, he's getting close and putting pressure. So it's a shame what happened. I wouldn't let him go, but I'm very optimistic about the team next year. And I think Eli had a great year. It's unfortunate that
yeah, he did.
Things didn't pan out the way he did, and he's not going to get the acclimates that he should get for the year that he's had. But when you look at out there, he's throwing balls to Ruben Randle, who's been in the system for at least 2 years now and who's been in this team for a long time. And it's clear that he, on the first interception, Ruben Randall, you know, he had the inside, and it happened in the San Francisco game. I'm sorry, in the Washington Redskins game. It happened in these games where he's the receiver. He had the inside position, and Eli's putting the ball there, and this guy's just, I'm not sure that he's afraid to get hit, but he's just not completing the routes, and he's hesitating. So I could go on. I could say a lot, but this year, I'm a season ticket holder, and even though the record is bad, every game was exciting other than two games, yesterday's and obviously the Eagles won. And I think Odell has a lot to do with the excitement that comes with the team. But with that being said, he can't be the only one. We have to find a way to get an additional one or two big play talent. And I'm not going to say receiver. Anywhere we could get him on this team, I think will be great. Go back to listen to the show. Have a great New Year's, guys.
And, you as well, Conrad.
Go Big Blue.
Appreciate the phone call. Well, if you look at the postseason teams right now across the board, Jeff, and you know the amount of playmakers that are on those teams, whether it be the Arizona Cardinals, for example, you know what they have in the running game, what they have in the receiving core. You look at the Green Bay Packers, although they've had some ups and downs because of injuries at certain positions. Carolina doesn't have necessarily household names, and I think it's important to bring that up because I think we get caught up, Jeff, especially in any sport. If it's not a household name, then the guy's not good,
right,
and he's not going to do anything. Carolina and Arizona are two examples of teams that, if you look at their receiving core by name, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is the one recognizable name for both teams.
Yeah,
Kelvin Benjamin's hurt for Carolina.
And I think that, you know, you got your lunch pail guys, the guys that come to work every day, and they make plays for you, but they're not the star names, okay? You got to have guys on your team like that. What's been missing on this team is that the only guys that are really making plays. When I say this, you think about this. You got Eli to Odell Beckham. Who else is making plays? Who else is making pick
sixes? Consistently.
Who's making sack fumbles, strip fumbles at the end of a game? The playmakers are not, they're non-existent. And every team that's in the playoffs moving forward has a guy in probably three to – now, I will tell you this. Dwayne Harris made some plays, two kickoffs for a touchdown, okay? Those are the types of things you need. And each one of those facets of the game, offensively, defensively, and special teams, you got to have playmakers. You got to have big plays. And it's missing. And so what's missing defensively are those big plays. Somebody's going to have to step up. We've seen it offensively. It happens. Odell Beckham makes some big plays. Last night, Ruben Randall, for what it's worth, that was a big play in the game. It didn't matter. The game was out of hand at that point anyways, but that's a big play. You need more of those. You really do.
See, Beckham consistently has made big plays every single week.
Every week.
Then if you look at the rest of the receiving corps, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Dwayne Harris, the game that jumps out to me, I'm not talking about special teams. He's had another teams plays. The Saints game. Remember, he gets banged up, Jeff. He comes back in, made plays for his quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, that's a game that you say Dwayne Harris brought his lunch pail in terms of your analogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then Larry Dinell, game-winning touchdown against the San Francisco 49ers. Okay. Hey, that's a play you made for your quarterback. Rashad Jennings in the Buffalo Bills game, going above the X's and O's, missing, forcing a couple of missed tackles, making a play. Whereas Beckham, you could pick out five or six games, seven games.
You just mentioned four, maybe five plays. Beckham trumps those three times over.
And sometimes he does that
in one game alone.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
You need more of those playmakers and making big plays in big games. And we're not telling you guys anything you don't know and that the coaching staff doesn't know either. Because it's preached on a day in and day out basis that guys, we got to make plays. That's how you win in the National Football League. You don't turn the ball over, and you make plays. Period. That's it.
I sent this out on Twitter during the course of the game. Trevin Wade deflects a touchdown pass that was intended for Mike Wallace last night. Great play. Got a fingertip on it. And that's the
third down play.
Third down play, correct. And I looked at that play, and the first thing that came to mind, if that type of play happens, Jeff, in three or four other games in the fourth quarter, that's the difference between winning and losing a game. See, it's those types of plays. And sometimes it's all about timing. It's all about being in the right place at the right time. It's about having your nail get a piece of the football.
Something,
as opposed to – but that was the type of play that jumped out and said, that's what has been missing at times in crunch time. It's that type of play.
Yep. And I think that, you know, when you look at Trevin Wade, the way he's played the second half of the season, he's played pretty well. You know, he's actually took over for McBride. I mean, that's in that position. So I think that bottom line, don't need to beat a dead horse here, is the fact that There's just more playmakers needed, more big plays. And some of those games, you're right, Lance, if you go back to Trevin Wade, or not pointing him out by any means, just saying a player on the Giants makes a play in one of those situations, they might have two more wins under their belt. And, you know, this game going into the Eagles with the Redskins, the way they were playing, it might mean a little bit more. But, you know, so, see, man. Ifs and buts were cherries and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right?
Indeed.
How apropos for this holiday season.
Yes, exactly. Man. Well said. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the lines. Greg is in Virginia. Greg, what's happening?
Come on, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Doing well, Greg. What do you have for us?
Good. Hey, I was just calling. I caught the show about halfway through, so I'm not really sure if everyone's touched on it or not. But, you know, I've been thinking about it, and, you know, we have a franchise quarterback, and he's playing some of his best football.
Yep.
And we still suck. Like, let's just be real. We suck. You know, imagine if we didn't have a franchise quarterback. You know, every single position group, you can make an argument for needing to be a focus in free agency in the draft, except for quarterback. I mean, every single position group. And, you know, the caller from that was talking about the third and the fourth round, he was dead right. I made the one Giants game when they had a finale against the Eagles. It was the OC's last game. I think it was the year after we won the second Super Bowl against the Patriots. And I got a program, and it had the draft class on that program. And I was looking at it because I got signed, and it's in a frame at my house. And that draft class was Adrian Robinson, Marcus Kuhn, Mosley, McCants, Reuben Randall, Jayron Hosley, and David Wilson. And now, except for David Wilson, you know, I'm from southwestern part of Virginia, so I was a big fan of his, you know, Virginia Tech's right around the corner. And I think he would have had a good career. But that's got to be one of the worst draft classes ever. No production at all. And, you know, I'm thinking about the team moving forward. What, in your opinion, who's the nucleus we've been built around other than Beckham, obviously?
Well, I think a lot depends on, you know, what they determine to do in free agency. For example, you know, a number of guys who have made plays this year, like a Robert Ayers, for example. You know, I mean, that's somebody that you look at as a playmaker on the defensive line, but, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to test free agency.
Sure, and so he's got 8.5 sacks.
Correct, which makes him extremely marketable. So it's hard to say, based on your question about, is that guy even going to be a nucleus?
I'm just curious. Like, when I think of it, I think, the obvious things I hear from Giants fans is like, oh, Pew, Richburg, Luke Amora, but they suck.
No, they don't. They're good players.
They're average. They're average. They're not good.
Well, you have a young offensive line. I mean, you just named a number of offensive linemen. Pew, Richburg, and Flowers. Those are three guys you're going to build around
Richburg,
for the future.
Richburg almost made the Pro Bowl. So if he sucks, I don't know. I guess the rest of the guys, I mean, come on. Seriously. It depends on.
We have finesse linemen.
Well, I mean, listen, it's your opinion. You're entitled to that, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, when you look at these guys, I think that Richburg and Pew, these are going to be good players for the Giants. You know, look at the way Richburg, his rookie year, is playing out of position. Pew is all over the place where he plays. He's very versatile. So, I mean, you got to give a little bit of credit to these guys, the way that they play. And I think that there is a little bit of nastiness in those two guys, something that's missing on that offensive line, in my opinion. But I think Pew and Richburg have it. I think you got a little bit of a toughness. You got a huge toughness out of Ereck Flowers, a rookie who is playing left tackle. They drafted him to play right tackle, by the way. But with the injury to Beattie, he was over there. So, you know, if you're going to go down that line, I think that offensive line has got an upside to it. But, you know, you think about goes back to the playmakers that we just talked about. You got Odell Beckham, you got Eli. But other than that, I mean, you really don't have too many guys that are making plays.
Yeah. I hope you're right. I mean, maybe I'm just grieving or whatever. You know.
You are. And you know what? You deserve that.
you know, but it is getting old. And I'm a big Tom Coughlin supporter. I really like, you know, I was in the military, so I really appreciate people who are just promote
overall good quality human beings, and he definitely he's more than just a coach from an outsider's perspective. Obviously, I've never had a conversation with him, but I appreciate that part of him.
Yeah.
But then, I came to a realization that, like, maybe I'm having these feelings about, for example, Richburg and Pugh. It doesn't seem like we develop anyone. Before the season, I was thinking, okay, Pugh in the third year, Richburg, you know, he's in his natural position. You know, I'm having all these high hopes, and now we're at the end of the year, and I'm just like, man, no one developed.
Keep in mind that, as Jeff pointed out, you know, Richburg's played different positions so far in a very small sample size of his career, and, I mean, he was nearing Pro Bowl consideration this season. So you at least need to put things in perspective. Flowers has just played one season. He's also been moved around, and he has played through multiple injuries, including an ankle injury that's still lingering. So from a toughness perspective, hard to criticize a guy like that. And at the same time, Greg, I would also throw in Pugh in that conversation because he's also been moved around during the course of his career, whether it be left guard, left tackle. So, you know, a lot of these guys, when you bring up development, and we could sit here and break down every single game and how they fared, but I think you do need to take into consideration, when was the last time that one offensive lineman who's that young has played, you know, one set position since they arrived in the league? It's been a lot of movement on this O-line since those three guys have entered the Giants and been in the mix.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess, in my opinion, I personally like the idea of just road graders at guard. And, you know, that's just my personal opinion. It seems like we get guys that are interchangeable because, like you said, you know, we're filling in many guys who can play multiple positions. And I don't like that. Like,
well, injury has a lot to do with
that. That's the nature of the league, though, Greg.
Invested. But it's like, let's get someone who's damn good at their position as opposed to someone who can be okay at three.
Well, they're all required to play different ones. So, I mean, and depending on injuries, that's why they're all required to play different positions, because you only have, nine linemen that play five spots, and most likely every week two of them are inactive, so that leaves you two backups, and it's just, you know, it's tough. It's tough to keep a healthy line in there. Five of those guys being healthy all season is a rarity. It really is.
Hey, Greg, appreciate the
phone
call.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's move along here on the phone lines. We know this young man, I think, was at the game.
Yeah,
last
we got you. Hey,
right,
Abdul,
Jeff?
We got your
Abdul
tweet last
is in
night,
Minneapolis. So. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was at the game last night, and
there we go.
For alcohol, so I got to say, it kept me warm and it kept me sane. Yeah, it was embarrassing, man. It's you know, this team is so bereft in talent. It's kind of numbing. You know, I really haven't seen something like this since, you know, I was 8 years old in the 70s. You know, I remember first watching, you know, the Brad Van Pelt, you know, Perkins team. You know, it was just, I was watching, you know, players. There's a couple of players that stood out. You know, I think Jennings played, you know, and Ayers. But everyone else just seemed like, you know, I'm not saying they didn't try hard. They just didn't have enough. This one, they're not talented. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I could say. You know, Ruben Randle couldn't get any separation. And this is my first live game. I had good seats, so I was able to watch it. You know, on TV, you get a TV's perspective. So, you know, I was able to key on some certain players. And, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and call people's jobs right now. But the biggest problem with this team is its glaring lack of talent in almost every single position.
And that's
where we are right now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm cutting you off.
No, it needs to be addressed. It really is. Because when you look at any team, for that matter, when you don't have the depth, when you have injuries, you hope that you have some depth behind there. And those guys certainly have to step up. We've said this before, Abdul, that when you lose – guys at the top of your roster and you know your backups begin to start to be starters, you're now reaching really deep into the bag trying to find talent, pulling off a practice squad, trying to pick up guys off the waiver wire. These guys are practice squad and waiver wire guys for a reason. And when you have a roster that it has a gap in it, you got to fill it. You got to have whatever's out there, but you know, injuries play a huge part of this. drafting is not a perfect science, but you got to be lucky at times. Like the previous caller said, you got to kind of those third and fourth round picks. You're hoping you get a Pro Bowler out of there somewhere, in you know, down the line. You look at a prime example of hitting on a draft pick is Ahmad Bradshaw. He's a seventh round draft pick. I mean, look at that's kind of, you know, you hit on one of those guys, and man, that's a win-win there. But when you don't have the guys that are there to fill in your depth, you get what you saw last night. You get exactly what you saw last night.
We have gone through years of our draft picks, like at 1-7, not padding out. You know what I'm saying?
And listen,
Jeremy Davis was inactive last night. Some guy we picked up off the practice squad made it in the game before Jeremy Davis did.
Listen,
what is that about?
Well, I think he's a seventh-round draft pick, sixth, seventh-round draft pick. You know, anytime you're sixth, seventh, those are borderline street free agents anyways. But
last night on defense, we had a lot of starters out there. You know, Landon Collins cannot cover. You know, I've been a big supporter of him. I watched him last night. He was out of position all night. Trying to cover the tight end. It wasn't just one or two plays. It was all the guy can't cover. He's a great in the box safety. You know, maybe we got him for that, but why? You know, he can't cover. He can't cover the deep. He's not a cover safety. And if we try to keep doing it, we're putting the man out of position.
Well, Abdul, we have seen safeties. This is across the league that have changed positions at times. Thomas Davis is one guy in particular for the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, that may be something that comes up in conversation in the offseason now that they've evaluated him over the first 16 games of his career. Moving forward, where is the ideal place to put him?
I need to get a bigger picture here because I'm trying to pick apart people after a bad game. You can do, you know, it's kind of a waste of time, I think. What I left when I was talking to my friends last night after they stopped making fun of me.
I'm sure they were.
Like, what are you guys going to – you guys are wasting Eli Manning. You know, this guy is almost 35 years old. You have a lot of decisions. You know, you have some money, you have a lot of holes to fill. Do you trust the people in your organization to make these decisions? Do you trust whoever's in control, you know, to steer our organization over the next 2 or 3 years? Because we have some major decisions. We have cap space, and we have high draft picks. Are you confident that the people who are in charge will make the right decisions? And right now, I am not. You know, because this is based on track record, just not a gut, you know, reaction after a bad game. You know, this is after 3 or 4 years of the same people making decisions, not making the right ones. And now we're going to an extremely important offseason. And I think, you know, the Marlins have put themselves in a bad position because we could have pulled the plug 2 or 3 years ago, and because of loyalty and because there were 2 Super Bowls, you know, hanging over our heads. Not hanging, but, you know, in our history, you know, we didn't pull the trigger. And now it's 2 years down the road, I think, 2 years too long, that, you know, you can't change a coach and make Eli look a third new defense, offense. You know what I mean? I think they like the assistant coaches. I think they're very high on both the Spagnuolo and
McAdoo, you're talking about.
I think they like him, but there's not enough talent. I just right now, if you ask me, I don't think the right man is in position to bring us into our future. But I don't understand. I don't know what to do about it, because I think, you know, change for change's sake sometimes is not the best thing. But I don't know.
Abdul. Speechless. I want to try to squeeze in a few more callers, but do appreciate you weighing in here, and hope you recover from that cold game on Sunday night. Let's hear from Jason in Maine. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Jason. What do you got for us?
I had a question for you, and then I just wanted to share a concern I have. I'm wondering if you agree with me that JT Thomas should – do you think that was a quick ejection last night?
Absolutely.
That was warranted?
The guy slapped the guy across the face. I just think that, you know, it was one of those situations where the referees were warned about it, and I don't know. I mean, it was a pretty knee-jerk reaction in my mind.
But he reacted to what the other player did, but I think you need to take into consideration, Jason, after what transpired with Beckham and Norman last week, and it's another Giants game, the officials clearly are going to be a little bit quicker in terms of how they react to something like that.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah, and that leads me to my concern, and then I'll hang up and listen to you guys. But I'm just concerned, like, and I think it'll be interesting to watch next week as well, but how quick will they be? I mean, if it seems like, especially with Beckham now, especially after all the things that were talked about last week, you wonder what it'll take for them to eject him in the future. And if it's not going to take much, then I think we're really in trouble. And just wanted to hear what you think about that, and just appreciate you for taking my call.
All right, Jason. Thanks for the phone call.
I honestly, in my opinion, believe that Odell has learned a lesson here. I think that he's, without reason, he's going to be there. He's going to get the same stuff every week. He's going to get, you know, he's going to get people trash talking him. It's up to this young man to take it upon himself to come up with a strategy on how to handle these situations. How to just understand that it's just going to be that way, and then to focus in on what you have to do and what your route's going to be, and let it go. And to me, the best way that you can handle this type of situation is just to continue to make plays, continue to prove it on the field. Talk with what's on the field, not with your mouth. Okay, and so that to me would be my advice to Odell, is to go out on that field and just prove it to them that you can talk all you want. It affected me one time, and it affected me bad. I lost my composure. I lost everything. I lost a game check. I got suspended. You know, I'm not going to do this again, but right now I'm going to put it in your face because you're not going to cover me. And you know what? I believe him. Not many people can cover him.
No, not at all.
The only way they cover him is to get in his face, to get in his grill, and to get him out of his composure like Norman did. But that shouldn't happen again. It really shouldn't.
Well, there's more than enough time for him to change the narrative. And yeah, one game, one specific incident doesn't define his career. However, I will say this, and this relates to the point that the caller was going towards. If you look at DeMontre Moore, there is a track record that builds up. So officials put you under the microscope
right
when you hit the quarterback. There's
over
a late hit.
Over,
so Beckham is going to have to be careful, even the little things, how he reacts to corners, because the slightest thing may trigger a reaction from the official. So he does have to be cautious, but he's got more than enough time to put that game behind him
but
and let his game do
the talking.
It's
going to be important for him to be able to mentally prepare himself that how he, and this is going to take some discipline on his part. It's almost like, and I am not recommending this. I'm just saying it's almost like going into therapy a little bit. You got to learn how to handle these types of situations so that you can block it out and then go do what you got to do, because you do not want to, you know, personally take yourself out of what you do good by having somebody else, reflecting on, hey, they're going to try to take me out of my game. I understand that. But mentally, I'm just telling you right now, football is a lot about physical tools, but mentally is where guys are distinguished themselves between the good players and the mediocre guys. It's the guys that can mentally take it to the next level. This for Odell Beckham is where it's going to be a challenge. I want to see how he accepts this and goes forward mentally.
Let's close out the program with one last caller. We got Mike in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing today, fellas?
Good,
on, Mike.
Good.
What do you have for us?
Hey, there was a caller that called in saying how the team sucks. And, you know, that kind of – I listen to y'all a lot, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. You know, for a lot of the moves that we've been making this year, Pugh having to move from tackle to guard, back to tackle, and back to guard. Hey, that's a lot.
It is.
He's doing a good job.
And if the guy sucks, he doesn't do that. Yeah.
So you have Richburg. He got drafted as a center, but he had to play guard, and then went back to center. He's doing a great job.
Yeah.
I think we just need to just really calm down. Hey, stuff didn't work out the way we wanted it to this year. But I will say for like the second string players, and hey, when your number's called, we're not looking for you to make great plays. But hey, do your job, man. Catch the ball.
Exactly.
And, I mean, that's it. If a couple of those passes were caught, the drive just keeps moving. And now you can give it to running backs run it up. What's his name? Rashad Jennings, let him do what he has to do. And he was doing a good job. But when you get those guys in and they're bobbling the ball goes off their hands, it gets intercepted, that changes the dynamic of the game.
Well, Mike, that's the difference between, I mean, I think you brought up an excellent point. You drop a pass on first and 10, now all of a sudden you're looking at second and 10. And then you drop a pass on second and 10, now it's a third and 10. So this is why you go 1-for-11 on third down, because it's not manageable anymore. So it's those little things that obviously come back to bite you, and they did on Sunday night.
Yeah, hey, that's just how the season has been all year. But I think we ultimately we have a good nucleus of players. I like Collins. I do think we need some help with coverage back there, but Collins is a good up in the box safety, and that's what he does good.
He played so it. He started that. Every game this year and played every game.
Was yes, not he a, has. Yeah, yes, so. He has. Healthy. I mean, hey, the guy said we just didn't make those certain plays when we needed it. The New England game. That's the pick. That game's over.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of games. I mean, not you know. Hey, last second heroics by the other team, and that's just what it boiled down to this year.
Listen, they took two undefeated teams, two undefeated teams to the very end of the game this season. So,
yeah.
You know, and so it isn't that every player sucks. It's just a matter of you know, consistency
and execution.
And execution.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's all it is. You know, to bring Carolina to a game like that, and you know, I'm a longtime Giants fan, and I know when we play hard teams, we always play them tough.
Sure.
We always play them tough, man. And that Carolina game, no, I mean, I was a little down in the beginning, but, hey, we got our groove back. Hey, tied it up. And, hey, that's what happens. That's what happens. If the defense can step up, you know what I mean? Hey, they got some money to try to pick up some new toys next year. Let's see how it goes.
Sure.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the phone call.
Taking my call.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in. And that's going to wrap things up for us here on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tom Coughlin will address the media later today. We'll have full coverage on our team website. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday as we get you set for the Giants and the Eagles to wrap up the regular season. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
He's got truth!